G'day and welcome to the Breaking Through podcast. Been doing some really cool episodes recently, but have always got to, you know, go back to the roots and interview musicians and artists, and especially the ones that, you know, that they're on the grind, they're working hard. And from a few years ago to when I started all this shit, that was just making music and doing Instagram posts, and now it's TikTok and like fucking no tomorrow. And this person, like, I get so many press releases and so many people sliding into my DMs, and it could be no at the time, or it could be when I have space. Like, I genuinely, most of the time, do not have space, just because it's great that, you know, people want to come on and agencies want to come on and that type of shit. But this person, I had a cancellation. Things turn around, and Love has decided to come on the podcast. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, bro. Thank you.
You did message me, and I don't know, maybe like a week ago, and I was like, I think it shows for people that, like, when I do say no, I'm not being an asshole about it. Like, when opportunities come up, I do go back and try and fit people in that, you know, obviously are keen to come on. But when you do message someone, or, you know, put an email out and you do get that no, how do you take rejection as an artist to, like, move forward and just go, like, yeah, it is what it is. Like, and it might not be rejection, like, of your music. It's just rejection of the time.
It happens, like, literally on a daily for me, because I don't have a team or anything anymore. So I think, honestly, like, to start, when you're starting out, it's super hard to take, because usually you're younger to start off with, right? And like, just being in the world and being younger means you just have less experience with rejection, generally speaking. But I think also just like, you just learn that it's a part of the game. And like, a lot of the time, like you said, and even like today with us, like, it's just a logistical thing most of the time. And a lot of the time it can be a product of, like, for example, I've been watching your stuff and I love it, you know, like, you just came up on TikTok one day and I was like, this guy, I think he knows what he's on about. You know, this is great. I'm into it. But it's like, if you're also doing something great at the moment for yourself with your pod or like with music or whatever, like, ultimately there's going to be some logistical clashes. So I think I've just learned not to take it personally. And if it's meant to happen, it's meant to happen. But with that being said, I think when it comes to things like shows and booking, yeah, that can be so brutal. It's been a couple of nights. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to throw down an extra beer tonight just because, you know, I just got rejected or whatever. But it's just part of the game, I think, yeah.
When I get rejection, well, like, one of my biggest fears in life is rejection. So I don't do it much, and I don't put myself in situations where that happens very often. So what I used to do, I used to get pissed. Well, not pissed, but tipsy. when I first started out, and would just message people that I'd really like to have on the pod, and then I would delete the messages. So, like, me the next morning, like, it's out of sight, out of mind. Like, I wouldn't know. And if they replied, great. If they don't, I don't know if they've seen it or not. It's great.
But that's a little bit, like, strategic. Oh, I like, mate, that.
Like, I don't want any, like, evidence of me getting rejected at all, because, like, I will think about it for, you know, my anxiety will go through the roof for, you know, the next week or two. So I can't have that. But I think the reason why I wanted to get you on was because, obviously, my content in the last 6 months, like, I stopped biting my tongue a bit, and kind of just say what I want to say and what I think's happening and that type of stuff. You're doing that in your own way with, like, you know, being an artist and, you know, logistical stuff and kind of the behind the scenes of what goes through your mindset in different situations. Now, I've dealt with this of, like, you know, saying something I think could be, you know, could be seen as controversial or, you know, just a bit more deep, and it gets, like, you know, couple hundred views, or it only gets like this amount of likes. When you're expressing yourself in a way that, you know, is hard to do, and like, you don't get kind of what you want from it, how hard is that to take?
Oh, it can be so hard. I think the best example I can think of is, I think you and I probably both share a pretty similar disdain for the whole, like, yeah, just the whole TikTok, the media thing, the short form thing. Like, it's a part of the game. You just kind of get used to it. But, or maybe you don't, I don't know. But I don't know if you've seen that YouTube thing I'm doing at the moment, but I just went, you know what, I'm just going to go and make a 20-minute YouTube format, long format, right? Just say whatever I want. There's no editing. There's no BS. It's just kind of what I want to say. And like, when those videos go up, the first one did really well, and then the second two have just pretty much tanked, right? So I guess like it is hard because you're like, oh, do people actually listen to what I have to say? And do they think it's valuable? And if it's not, like, they're just obviously not watching it. Or is it just, I don't know. I get in a bit of like a debate with myself. I'm like, is this actually shit? Or is it just like the algorithm doesn't want me to do it this way? And if that's the case, then it's like, oh, well, actually, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it's just not getting views because it's not within a specific format, I suppose. But yeah, it can be really hard. I think what's been kind of interesting and a bit of a learning curve too is like, maybe when I put up those videos or fuck, whatever it might be, it's like, if I, in my head, I'm like, if I can get 3 or 4 people who really connect with it, who want to like interact with me, that's so much more valuable than it having like, you know, 1 million views or some sort of virality. But I'm also saying that from a point of view of being someone who, like, I'm not going to lie about it. If someone said to me, do you want a viral TikTok song tomorrow? Of course I'm going to say yes. Like, just, it seems to be the way to move forward. So it hasn't happened for me yet. So I do question like whether what I'm doing is, you know, good. Is it bad? Is it good? Is it just the algorithm's not kind of working the way I think it needs to work or whatever? Like, yeah, I don't know. Comparison's a horrible thing at times. Hey,
I've had it all throughout my music media career, and it sucks because like everyone's on a journey going through, you know, ticking off different things at different times. And it's like just waiting for your time can seem to, you know, put you in some pretty shit mindsets over time. But like those little wins, and that could be
the best. Yeah.
That could be, you know, getting a guest on for me, or that could be getting job opportunities through the podcast, or just little conversations at the end of a podcast of just going like, yep, you're good. Or like, you know, someone reached out last year and was like, hey, I did my final uni assignment on your podcast. I was like, oh, what? What?
That's awesome.
And I was like, what the hell? Like, that's awesome. And so like those little things that, you know, wouldn't mean much to anyone else, but it means a lot to me. So like, it's those little things that, especially in an environment we are now, like, fuck, sucks. What keeps you going?
Yeah. I think what keeps me going is like, I think just constantly reflecting on like how far I've come. I think I've learned that if I don't do that, I'm screwed. Like if I don't, on like a weekly basis, try and have a look at those small wins like you were mentioning, I'm done for, because I'll just crawl back into my hole and just kind of, and like, I guess to look at the bigger picture, right? It's like you and I are kind of doing what we're trying to do, what we, I'm assuming you love doing and I love doing. It's like, they're very much the same thing in many ways. They're just different formats. And in like the grand scheme of things, like, you know, we have it pretty good, you know, like you and I could like, this is what we want to do. And there's a sense of like self-fulfillment in that. But we could probably go work a semi-decent job tomorrow and walk away from all of it. We're still going to have dinner tomorrow night, you know? So I think for me, like I've had definitely some moments where I'm like, oh shit, if I don't stop, reflect, count those wins, like I'll just crawl back into the same hole I was like 2 or 3 years ago. But I don't know. With that being said, there's also a part of me that's like, I can't really imagine my life not doing this, even though it's a struggle, you know? And I'm assuming most creatives, artists would say like, there's a matter of like, I guess this internal desire to like just do this because you feel you don't have a choice. Like this is what you are supposed to be doing on some sort of spiritual level or whatever. So I think reflecting is really important. Like even, I think we played a show Saturday night. It was like one of the biggest ones we've played. And like the bands changed 3 or 4 times. It's like, you know, different songs, different formats. I've been rejected so many times. But, you know, when you walk out there and you play, leave your heart out there, you know, and then you walk off, if you're not going like, fuck yeah, that was actually amazing, we had a great time, and actually like, don't come off stage and start analyzing everything and just like, yeah, we got it, we killed it, we can go and reflect, you know, next rehearsal on what we can do better. But I had to tell myself, my 15-year-old self, oh, we're going to be opening for some US act who's touring with like, you know, 250 people in the room, you know, I wouldn't have believed you. So I think that's kind of the secret for me.
I saw a video of yours and you're like one of the first artists that I've seen talk about it, because I do it from a different point of view. You watch acts and like you've taught yourself, or, you know, figured out a way to not analyze it, where analyze their sets and go, this is what I do, blah, blah, blah. I do that in the sense of like, I'll see it and I'll be like, oh, they should be doing this. Like, that'd be better if they did that. Yeah. Or like questions that like I would ask from the set that I just Like, I will always be thinking, I'll see an act and I'll be thinking of podcast questions for 2 years and then I'll finally get to do it. And it's like, people will be like, oh, how do you know you're going to interview them? It's like, well, a lot of the dream guests I've wanted to have on, I've had on. So yeah. Like, I'm in this, you know, kind of mind space where it's like, yep, I'll probably get them on. Don't know when, but it'll probably happen.
Yeah,
but
for
you've figured a way to, you know, not do that and just enjoy it for what it is. Like, how did you get to that point? Because I'm not at that point yet.
I think I'd be lying if I said like I'm fully at that point, but I think what has definitely made it better. That's actually such a hard question to answer because it's just a lot of trial and error, right? It's like a lot of like, even for what you're saying now, I'm like, I think about, you know, acts that I'll go and watch or artists and whatever. And I've spent so much time analyzing what they're doing or what they shouldn't be doing and why that's a bad choice or like why we should be doing this. But I think ultimately it's like, I think a lot of it comes back to like, I don't have a team or anything like that, like I was saying before. And what that means now is that there's like full creative freedom, but it also means that like I'm responsible for every little fuck up that gets made as well. So I think it's just coming back to like, where am I going to put my energy and like, where am I going to put all my effort? And if I put like all my energy and effort into like, let's call it negative energy, right? Like it just goes into like criticizing this person or looking at what they're doing or hating on like this particular approach or like, it's like, oh, a great example, if I can share with you is like, and I won't say who, but there's some artists that I've done some touring with who I absolutely love. Great, great, great artists. But the way that they go about their social media landscape, I look at that and I cringe. Like, I genuinely cringe. I'm like, I wouldn't show this to anybody that I know because nobody's going to respect this. And nobody's going to respect you as an artist. And I think maybe that comes back to my sense of what an artist should be, because I've always been someone who's been into the artistry, albums, long form, the, let's call it traditional format of expression in the music space or game or whatever. But I look at these guys or whoever, these almost influencer style artists is like the way I want to think about it. It's like their content is based around being an influencer and not being an artist. And I still to this day, like I just deep down, I just can't bring myself to agree with that. But where I'm like I said, where I was like kind of like reminded that like I can't be putting all my negative, kind of putting all my energy into all that negative shit is like, because it'll just consume me. Like, you know, I'll just spend all my time thinking about that, how bad it is. And then like for me, the way I make music and stuff, it's like, that just doesn't result in good, that doesn't bring good results. You know, it just brings like, just brings a lot of negative energy. And then back to comparison. It's like, oh, you know, they're doing all this cringe content, but they're actually blowing up. Like, why am I hating on that? I don't have to agree with it. But that doesn't mean there can't be discourse about it. I don't have to agree with it. It doesn't mean I have to like let it rule my creative space. Yeah, I guess that's kind of like my thought pattern around that anyway.
I know the exact type of artist you're talking about. And I think I also don't like that, but there's obviously a lot of people that do and that works for them. Luckily, music is subjective, and I think a lot of music content as well is subjective.
For sure.
So, like, for me, I like something in the middle because I hate when people come up and are like, I need 10,000 pre-sales or we can't release this. One of my favorites, the artist has been doing it recently, and I know I'm going to get them on the podcast and I'm going to bring it up. And she's like, please don't do that anymore. That sucks. Or if like, you know, I'm not going to have people come on and be like, I love everything you do. My next couple of questions, I'm going to criticize you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, and it's, I'm always willing to have my mind changed. So if they go, this is why, I'm like, yeah, all right. I can see your point. Please stop, but please, yeah, I can see it. Now, there are two things in the music world that I hate, that I despise with an absolute passion.
I would love, I'm keen to hear these.
You, apart from everything that I talk about, these have been my two hates ever since I've started. And you have done both of these.
Oh, cool.
I absolutely despise 4-track EPs.
Oh, love it.
And I absolutely despise interludes.
Oh, you know what? Rightfully so, my man. Rightfully so. I think, you know, I actually don't feel that offended by that in any way, to be really honest with you. But, and I'm like I said, I'm all for it. Speak your mind. I love it. I think the interlude thing is something I'm changing my mind on. Actually, you were speaking about how you're going to, you know, you're changing your mind about, you know, you're willing to change your mind. I'm willing to change my mind, you know, and always evolving and developing. And I think the interlude thing for me is an interesting one because so many of my favorite artists have done it. And I think back when I was like 16, 17, 18. And I remember the first time I heard Frank Ocean Blonde, which would have been in 2016. I was in Griffith University in Mount Gravatt in a basement. And I think I had like just broken up with some girl or something. And I just remember just that album just hitting me in all the places that it hurts. And I remember hearing the, I don't know if you recall the, I don't know how well you know that album, but there's the Facebook Friends interlude on that album where there's this like French guy and he's talking about how, he was with this girl. And then, anyway, point being is I think I look back at that and I think there's a sense of nostalgia around the whole interludes thing. But I definitely think it's something that like, in my particular scenario where I haven't come out with an album yet, I'm like, I do look back at one of the ones I did on one of the EPs a little while ago. And I'm just like, oh, I don't really know that added value. Like I don't regret anything that I've made or anything like that. It's just like, yeah, what value did that really have for the listener? Like I probably could have just, and sometimes I wonder coming back to the kind of shape of the industry at the moment, I wonder if people, it's certainly not the reason I did it, but the reason why I think a lot of people are doing 4-track EPs and interludes and so forth is just to get the track count up sometimes. I'm like, because I don't know how much you know about the back end or how much you know about like the sort of distribution end on Spotify and stuff, but it's definitely swinging towards just like regular uploading. You know, it's kind of becoming Instagram. Like the more you can upload, the better. The more you feed the algorithm, the better. So sometimes I think that's definitely like a reason it's getting done. But I wonder how much that has to do with the ecosystem. Like people putting out, I see people putting out, what's your thoughts on this? People are putting out a song a month for 12 months. What's your thought on that?
I know a lot of my mates that are in bands that, you know, have released EPs and whatnot and haven't gotten to that level. And then, you know, they're with management and all that type of stuff. And then they've just, you know, gone by themselves and gone to release a song every 6 weeks, just as singles. They're not doing EPs. They're not doing albums. And they're doing, their streaming numbers are the best they've ever done. Their shows are the best they've ever done. They're getting, you know, interstate shows and festivals. So what does that say for our scene? Like, I know everyone wants to tick off the albums and the albums and the EPs and whatnot. And I like, the way I like to listen is EPs. I like a good 5 or 6 track EP. I think 6 is perfect. And like, I feel like when you're releasing an EP and like, you know, you build up that, oh, we're releasing an EP, blah, blah, blah. I feel like 5 or 6 is that number where, as a listener, you feel fulfilled as like, all right, yeah, this is an EP where it's like,
there's enough there. Yeah.
There's enough there to be like, especially if you've done like, you know, 2 or 3, I won't say who it was, but something that really irked me that still sticks with me. And I do love this act and they know I love them, but they released 3 singles and then released a 4-track EP.
Yeah.
Like that's not an EP. Like if you're going to do a 4-track EP, that's, you know, you do one release and then
drop the whole thing.
It makes sense now because, you know, obviously in a cost of living crisis, if you want your song to sound incredible, you're going to have to spend that money. So like I can understand now why there are a lot more 4-track EPs. I hate it, but I can understand it. So like, I think the next 12 months, I just don't, if I was an artist, like I know people making albums and that type of shit and I get it, but I wouldn't be doing that for the next 12, 18 months. I'd be going single after single just to get out of this rough patch. And especially, you know, super expensive to make an album or an EP, just set a schedule out, be consistent. Disgusting that we have to do it for an algorithm, but that's with everything now. And just do that for the next 12, 18 months. And if it doesn't work, go back to albums and EPs. But if it does work, great.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up well. I think it's probably one of those other things that like the average punter, average listener has no idea about. They have no idea about the fact that, like, let's say, even not from a label point of view, right? Because these days, I think it's pretty, we're pretty aware of what labels are doing in the release world anyway. So it's like that, I think you've nailed it. It's like 4-track EP, 5-track EPs, and they're getting Waterfall released, you know, one a month for 4 months. And then on the 5th month, it's dropping with maybe one extra song.
Hmm.
And I think people are doing that, like, yeah, purely because it feeds the way that is, you know, and it works. Like, it works for the algorithm on Spotify. It works for your release radar, works for your pitching. You know, that's kind of like, yeah. And yeah, I feel like you've really, that's something that I've never thought about to that extent. I think you've really nailed it. And as someone who is a lover of albums and is a lover of, yeah, those 6-7 EPs, it is kind of, yeah, it is a bit of a bummer, I suppose, now that I like really think about it. But
yeah, it sucks. And I've been getting so negative on everything recently, and like I've been getting called out on it, and it's like, it's good to be critical, but like I find it hard to stay on the positive side. But like with pitching, like if you're pitching an album, like you get one shot. But if you're pitching singles and all you do is singles,
oh, multiple. Yeah.
You get to, you know, get feedback on your pitches and be like, hey, this is what we're doing right. And then when, you know, you've done 6 or 7 pitches, because that's all you've released, then that works better for your EPs. Like, I get a lot of press releases that I can tell they don't have management or labels helping them out. And, you know, it does come into it sometimes when I'm like, I can tell you made this by yourself. Like, and
yeah, yeah.
And when your promotions and all that, you know, labels do help in that regard with PR and all that type of stuff. Is there anything, you know, I've been talking about for venues and festivals and that type of stuff to think outside the box about, you know, what they're doing to get people back or people listening to music, blah, blah, yeah, blah. Is there anything unique that you're doing that seems to be working or that you've got in the pipeline that you're like, fuck, if I get this cooking, I think this will go well?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately because I've kind of come from a space of not really being super interested in doing like heaps of shows and stuff. Like for me, I kind of came from the point of view of like, oh, I want the music to be the focus, and I really want the live show to think kind of just to happen over time. But I do find myself in a position now where live shows is becoming a pretty significant and constant thing. I can't think of anything that I'm doing. I'm just trying to think if there's anyone that I'm seeing as well that I just go, wow, that's really the way to do it. I don't know from a venue perspective. I'm not totally sure. And that's actually why I've been listening to a lot of what you're saying recently, because it's kind of something I've never had to think about all that much. So it's been great to get your perspective on it. I think for me, the thing I'm seeing, and maybe you'll have to get your opinion on as well, is like, I'm seeing a lot of co-headline tours happening at the moment.
Mm, mm-hmm.
That's something that seems to really be coming through. And the reason I'm finding that really interesting is recently I booked up a headline show for June. And just normal thing, as an artist, you need support acts, right? So generally speaking, I'm not afraid to talk about the actual monetary value because I feel like it's another thing people don't talk about. But
yeah, it's important.
Generally speaking, in Brisbane, like if I'm getting a support show at a Black Bear Lodge or a zoo or something like that, like the most I've really ever been offered is $250, right? Like that's not even enough to pay the band most of the time, right? But that's kind of how these things go. It's interesting to me seeing artists who are with management and who are with labels, because there's been quite a few I've reached out to for support. And it's not the actual artist's fault. I think a lot of the time it's the management and the label, but they'll come back to me and be like, we aren't taking anything less than $500. I'm like, $500 and you're going to play half an hour worth of music? I would love to pay you that because I think you're worth that, but it's just not in the vernacular. Like, it's not going to happen. And then like a couple of months later, I'll see that same artist on a co-headline tour and there won't even really be a support act. Like, it'll just be a co-headline tour. And I don't know, I haven't actually been to one, but what do you think about that? Do you think it's something that's going to hang around for a while? Do you think it's worth even trying from my point of view? Like, as someone who isn't setting up these shows, is that attractive?
I think so. It's like, there's not going to be any one way out of the situation that we're in. So I think a heap of different solutions, even if they're, you know, experimental like that,
yeah,
to go like, because let's think of, okay, in Brisbane, right? Like if you're traveling to Brisbane, let's say you're going with another Melbourne act, and you have like a 3 or 4 leg tour, like you'd be probably staying in the same spots, you know, be able to logistically kind of figure out how you can both do it, and you'd be both in the same situation. So maybe you can figure out a cheaper way to do it. And you know, if you're doing co-headliners, like that's double the exposure.
Yeah. For sure.
So I think they're good. And it's funny, like I saw like 3 or 4 this morning on TikTok, them pushing it. One in Brisbane as well. So I wonder if we're talking about the same artist. And like, I can see the negatives and positives. I don't want it to be a permanent or a huge solution, because like then that knocks out like all the supports. And obviously we need to support our really grassroots, because you've all got to start somewhere. I think there's a place for them. It's just everything I say is like, you just got to do everything with balance. But it's, if I was an artist, it's definitely something I'd venture into to see the positives and negatives. And then, you know, you say that you analyze, you know, everything. So like you can just, you know, a week after the come down, after that's finished, and go, all right, what worked, what didn't.
Absolutely.
And then maybe there's some of those things that you can incorporate to your shows, your solo headliners. And then, you know, maybe just be like, in my schedule, in my calendar, I could do one here. This could help me get into that market. So I think they're good, but
yeah, cool.
With anything, be cautious, I'd say.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, yeah, it's just, like you were saying, there's not one way out of it, and it really is like experimental, but long term, you do hope things can just kind of go back to where they've been. I've got a question for you, if that's cool as well. What do you think, this is so open-ended, but as someone who probably is closer to being a ticket buyer than like a show, someone putting on a show, what for you is too expensive for a ticket? Like where is that ceiling? Like, obviously it's relative a lot of the time. I'm not talking about international acts right now either, right? Let's say like someone who is like in and amongst the caliber maybe that I'm in at the moment with that sort of stuff. A perfect example would be like, let's say a Golden Vessel or a who else? Someone in that kind of caliber, like in someone who's like locally, you know, has that kind of platform. They're doing really well. We're thinking about 100 to 200 cap for venue. Where do you draw the line? As someone who cost of living, all the stuff that, you know, we've kind of been talking about, where do you draw the line? What is a fair and unfair price to ask somebody? Because not that I'm having this question for myself, but I just think it's talking about the money thing. It's like, it's just an inevitable part of our industry. Where is the ceiling? Where do you go, get out, I'm not coming, that's too expensive? If you had to put a figure down, like what's the upper limit?
That's so hard. And it comes down to like, who are the supports? Because like when I look at a lineup or when I look at a show, it's like, okay, am I just going to pay $40 to see the headliner for the show? Or are the supports really good? And I know like one of their songs and I'm like, great. I actually give a shit about who's supporting. So like, I'm getting the bang for my buck.
Yeah.
That's hard, because that's different for everyone. Like, I'd probably say if you venture into the 40s, I'm going, nah. Like,
I'd say I'm pretty similar. Yeah.
Like if 35, I think in our current market is probably where I draw the line. But it's like, if you can get it into that like 29-95 area, just so I can see the two. Like, yeah, that makes me feel so much better about it.
See you too. Love it.
And like, you might be 5 cents off that 30, but just to, you know, I remember buying tickets for, you know, decent gigs for like 15, 20 bucks. And it sucks that we're not there anymore. But, you know, 35 or, you know, 40 could be great for some people, but also like horrendously expensive for others. And that's, you know, that comes with the situations we're in, where the line that we used to have was so much bigger. Of like, oh yeah, it's a bit too expensive, but nah, fuck it, let's go. Where that line is just so much smaller.
Gone.
So like, if you're a dollar over, they're like, nah, not doing it. So that's why it's like, you know, it's adding to going, it's not just seeing the music anymore. It's got to be the full experience. So what else is there? Like festivals, I spoke to Jesse from Party in the Paddock on the last episode, and he was like, Party in the Paddock's not just, you know, it's not just a... a festival for music or whatever, it's got to be that full experience. You've got to pay for that. Yep. So we've got to figure out how to bring that to shows, how to bring that to headline shows. I haven't figured it out yet, but you know, that's, it's for artists and that type of stuff and venue managers and that type of shit to be like, hey, this is what we can start to do. If it doesn't work, but it might, you might start something.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then I think, because the other thing, to come back to your previous question about what am I seeing that people might be doing, I'm also like kind of the opinion that if we are where we are at the moment, what I've seen a couple of those like pay what you want kind of gigs as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, rock up, pay, kind of pay what you want. Obviously not mega sustainable from like an artist point of view, because most like people are going to, lowball is not the right word, because people are going to pay what, you know,
they can.
What they can. So it's not lowballing, but it's like, yeah, as an artist, I'm like, is that worth, you know, there is a part of me that sees that as being an attractive option, but I'm like, how am I going to pay everybody? How am I going to pay the band? How am I going to fund everything that I need to be funding? And I think most of the guys out there at the moment, no one's trying to walk away with thousands of dollars. No one's trying to do that. We're all just trying to kind of make it happen just so there's enough money to go around. At least, like, I hope so anyway, you know.
I think it comes down to, and you'll see a lot of the people doing that, what I've seen anyway, that, you know, they're established.
Yeah.
So, like, it's for them to get their album out or whatever. I haven't seen a lot of up and coming bands do that, unless it's like, you know, a local venue for them or something, and it's like down the road, so they don't have to, you know, pay those logistical costs or whatever, or as much. Yeah. Again, I think there's a place for them, but obviously not sustainable, and it depends how much you value just getting your shit out there, and how much you value getting new fans, and you know that the money to that, it's different for everyone. In saying all of this, how scared are you for the future as an artist? Like the next 12, 18 months for you? Like, are you shitting yourself? Are you cautiously optimistic? Bit of both?
Yeah, I find that a hard question actually, because as for where we're at the moment as a kind of live band, I've never played so many shows and it's fantastic. And the good thing to see is that the people who are coming out, especially in Brizzy, they're coming to have a good time and they're giving that energy off. And it almost has a little bit of a underground feel to it, in terms of like people are struggling. So when they are coming to shows, they're like really feeding the energy, which is great. I find it hard to answer, because I've probably never been in this position where I'm playing more shows than I've ever played. The streaming is doing the best it's ever done. I'm selling more merch than I've ever sold. Like all, but in the grand bubble of things, like I'm kind of aware that like if this is the best it's going to get, it's still not a sustainable career. Like that's just the truth. Like it's so, I think for me, I'm kind of like, I'm optimistic about, for lack of a better term, like getting our stuff out there and growing in numbers and growing in fans and growing in followers, et cetera, et cetera. But as for coming back to centering it back to being a human being, it's like, I've got a partner, you know, got to pay rent, I've got to eat. So how much of my life, I'm 20, 26, how much longer am I going to do this for? At least in a formalized setting, if we want to put it like that, because I don't think I'll ever stop making and playing music. It's just kind of part of who I am. But the formalized aspect of it, the industry aspect of it, that is scary to think about. Like, I'm 26, and by no means do I think when I hit 30, things are over. Don't get me wrong. But if I've only got a couple more years to kind of make the most out of my youth, like my, you know, being in my 20s, whatever that means, you know, and kind of building this thing, like at what point, I just don't see myself doing this for the financial gain. And that's the scary thing. It's like, I can grind for the next 4 or 5 years knowing that I'm just like most other artists. Like, I have a part-time job.
Yeah.
Things are the best they've ever been, but it's still not a sustainable career at this point. So yeah, I think that's kind of what does scare me, if I'm being honest. And when I was, to ramble on, like when I was coming up, in thinking about making music, like the guys that I was looking up to, Golden Vessels, the Akarais, the the guys in Brisbane who were doing their thing, the Vancouver Sleep Clinics of the world, like it just felt like once those guys hit a certain point that they would never have to think or worry about being an indie grassroots artist ever again. It was like, oh, they're off. They're doing those their thing and they're going to be okay, you know, and they're actually, they're going to just be successful. And definitely in the last three years or two years of the project, like that has been a massive shock to me to see how expensive it is and how it's just, I am probably never at this point in time going to be able to make a living off it, which is brutal, brutally honest, but that's just the truth at this point in time.
Yep. As also a 26-year-old trying to, make this shit full time, and also someone with a part-time job and find any little way to make money. Like I feel that, and the 30s quickly approaching, and you know, you got to do what you love, but you know, reality's got to kick in. Let's end on a positive note. Next couple shows, where can people see you?
Yeah, we're playing June 1st at Black Bear. That's a headliner. And I'll tell you who the supports are because I haven't actually announced yet, but I may as well. I'm going to have Toby Hobart and Lottie McLeod jump on. I actually really love Lottie. Like, I think she's going to smash in the next few years. And then Toby's obviously great as well. And then I actually will be doing another Sydney-Brisbane-Melbourne run. Can't say who with yet. It hasn't been announced, but we're doing like a bit of an acoustic kind of more intimate thing. Just because we've put out, you know, a bit more of a kind of folky EP. So it'll be a nice, I think, a more intimate and cost-effective way to kind of like let everyone have a little bit of a listen. But yeah, that's what's coming up. So super stoked for those.
Yeah. Well, once I heard acoustic, I went, cutting those costs. That's good.
Love.
Thanks for coming on. And thanks for being open and honest. Appreciate it.
Oh, dude. No, thank you. It's been great.
To keep up to date with all things Breaking Through, make sure to check out our socials.